You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson is, of course, our film guy. You can check out his blog at filmology.com. PH is the way you spell filmology, filmology.com. Love to hear from you. You might have views on the Oscar contenders. We're going to be going through a few of the Oscar contenders in the lead-up. I don't know if you even, you know, sometimes these award ceremonies are all kind of erratic and kleptocratic as well. But one of the films that is receiving heaps of attention has an actor who I actually really like, but he's been in some really bad films. His name's Bradley Cooper. Silver Linings Playbook. I liked Limitless.
Yeah, Limitless had an okay premise, but then it sort of betrayed it at the end. Yeah.
He did a film. I actually saw a preview last year, and I don't actually know if the film ever came out, called The Words.
Yeah, it came and went in a couple of weeks.
No, it was actually, it was weird.
Yeah, didn't see it. Didn't get a great critical reception.
Nah, it was rubbish. It was terrible. But he is, of course, in the Hangover and The Hangover 2.
Sadly.
But, you know, that's where most people have probably seen him the first time around. But tell me what's going on with Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah, look, I think this is getting a lot of press, mostly from the Oscar buzz. And I have to admit, I saw this last week and I saw it through a cold and flu haze, so maybe that sort of tempered my reaction a little bit. It's an interesting film, though. I mean, you could look at this film as a really sort of traditional rom-com in many regards. In fact, the films that it seemed to remind me of as I was, you know, watching this through the flu haze, it starts off almost like Garden State, where you've got this character who's suffered some sort of psychiatric condition, in this case the Bradley Cooper character, who's been in a psychiatric ward for the last 8 months. He's released back to the care of his parents, played by Jackie Weaver and Robert De Niro, who are both really good, and Weaver's another one who's got an Oscar nom for this film. And then meets a kind of another quirky girl who's going through her own mental issues, played by Jennifer Lawrence, another Oscar nomination. So it's pretty much that Garden State. The guy comes home with mental issues, meets a kind of quirky girl with a reflection of her own, and they form a kind of friendship. You're not quite sure where it's going.
I've got to say, it actually, when I read the first synopsis, it sounded a bit corny and syrupy.
Well, the second half of the film is a lot like Strictly Ballroom, because then they decide that as part of their therapy, as part of their self-esteem growing, this process, that they should enter a dance comp. And then the end is basically Little Miss Sunshine, where we finally have, you know, the saccharine kind of ending. Look, I'm a bit torn. I think the first half is interesting because of the focus on mental illness, because it's really a character-driven study, and it's quite a serious film in many ways. And Cooper, it's really nice to see him do something dramatic, because I didn't think he had it in him, to be honest.
Oh, no, I did. I always thought he was quite a decent actor, just in bad films.
Well, I mean, The A-Team is just a sublime film, and he's amazing in that. But yep. When you're in that, things like The Hangover and even Limitless, he's playing kind of the very much the kind of casual, debonair.
Like a mature Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
in
a sense. But it's not quite as good as, say, Tom Cruise's Magnolia, but he's pushing himself a little bit. So, you know, it is that first half when we're getting the sort of family dynamic. You're kind of not sure what's going on here. And I think a lot of this has to do with the director, David O. Russell, who, again, has a really eclectic filmography. He began with these really indie kind of coming-of-age films, Spanking the Monkey and Flirting with Disaster.
Right.
And then he moved on to more traditional fare like Three Kings, which was one of the first almost anti-war films.
Yeah, I love that, though. That was great.
Yeah, me too. I think it's a great film. And then it all came undone when he did I Heart Huckabees. And that was really kind of left-field, quirky. People sort of didn't come at him from that. And
which
then
was good. It was just a bit weird.
Well, yeah, it was. And then that sort of put him out of Hollywood for a bit until The Fighter. And then when he had the dramatic cred back for that, then this has sort of come on the tail of that. Look, in terms of Silver Linings, the second act of the film, or the second half of the film, is far more than just the conventional rom-com. One of the interesting things, though, about this film is the depiction of mental illness. And you know, often in Hollywood, you get the depiction of mental illness, which is the idiot savant, this idea of people with mental illness have access to some kind of wondrous beauty or wondrous talent or gift, which I think kind of fetishizes mental illness to a degree. And this one doesn't really do that. In fact, it goes the other extreme, which is almost to suggest that everyone has a form of mental illness.
Everyone's a little bit crazy.
Which is kind of problematic in some sense. I mean, it doesn't, it normalizes mental illness, which I think is a positive, but it also reduces all forms of mental illness to pretty much the same level. So you have the Bradley Cooper character who's suffering bipolar. You have the Jennifer Lawrence character who is sort of this post-traumatic stress, which is manifested in nymphomania. You have the...
Of course, because it's Hollywood.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got the De Niro character, the father who's is sort of aggressive and you know, so you've got the neuroses from all these other characters. So, I mean, I think it's interesting from that perspective. What that actually says about mental illness, I'm not quite sure.
Look, I'll ask you about Robert De Niro and Jackie Weaver in a moment. Let's just have a little listen to a part of the trailer from Silver Linings Playbook.
I Pat.
Hey.
What's this?
And tell me you took him out.
The court said yes.
Yeah, but what did the doctor say?
Can I do an interview for school project on mental illness?
No. I'm ready.
I feel motivated. I don't feel so angry all the time.
The whole time you're rooting for this Hemingway guy to survive the war and to be with the woman that he loves.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning, Pat.
I can't apologize. I will apologize on behalf of Ernest Hemingway, because that's who's to blame here.
Yeah, have Ernest Hemingway call us and apologize to us, too.
Yeah, so you can hear that. I mean, that's quite a funny depiction of mental health issues. But that can actually be some of the most distressing of moments for people who've got severe problems with something, you know, behaviours that could describe as schizophrenia. Does it get to the depths of, I guess, how debilitating that stuff can be?
It touches on the darkness, but with that humorous slant. I mean, this fact that he's trying to kind of restart, or he wants to restart his relationship with his ex-wife, who's been involved in an incident which has caused him to go into this sort of psychiatric ward to begin with. You know, and the Hemingway jokes that come through that. I mean, you can kind of get that sense if you've suffered through depression, this idea of wallowing in it through these things and thinking, hang on, I can't deal with this anymore, and trying to share it. But of course, his family are sort of neurotic as well. Mm. And that's all, that stuff is mainly in that first half of the film, which I think was, for me, the most interesting. But then it is that Hollywood factor. It feels like every rom-com has to come back to this kind of really conventional, really sort of neat structure. And in some ways, it actually condones some of the mental illness, because the De Niro character is a bookmaker. He's overly superstitious. There's a suggestion he has this sort of obsessive compulsive disorder. And then the film really kind of celebrates that at the end of the film and makes that a positive. And you think, well, it's the film's kind of having it both ways to a degree. But
then is he good, De Niro?
Yeah, that's actually one of the... I mean, Weaver's really good. The whole cast is really good. It's so nice to see De Niro actually push himself a little bit, because he's been on autopilot for like the last decade. I mean, really, since Analyze This, Analyze That, it's kind of been just that same stereotype. We get a little bit of... I mean, there's one scene in particular where you get a glimpse of the De Niro that was, and it's quite a powerful scene. It's still, you know, it's not vintage De Niro. Yeah. It's good enough, but I think the performances and maybe to a lesser degree the script is what would recommend this film above the traditional rom-com. I mean, so many rom-coms these days just a quirky overload, you know, Ruby Sparks and these kind of things. They're so saccharine and so quirky for the sake of it. This has got elements of quirky, but it's not laying it on with a trowel. I mean, it still knows when to sort of pull it back a bit, I think.
Now, look, not quite a rom-com, but I do want to mention Groundhog Day for reasons that I'll explain in a moment. We're speaking, though, of course, about Silver Linings Playbook. It's got Bradley Cooper, Jackie Weaver, Robert De Niro. It will be on wide release. It's an Oscar contender, including for Best Film. We're coming up to 11 minutes to 6 on 774 ABC Melbourne. Josh Nelson. I mentioned Groundhog Day. Josh was talking about rom-coms that are continually trying to find and break the mold. It's the 20th anniversary of Groundhog Day, so Groundhog Day, Groundhog Day, Groundhog Day. And, of course, if you at all remember the film, it happens in February when Bill Murray, the weatherman, goes to pluck the creature from the stump, or they watch the politician pluck the creature from the stump and try to give a prediction. And it is, of course, the film that so many others try to repeat. In fact, all those rom-coms with Adam Sandler, they are
50 first dates.
Yeah, so everything old is new again. And there was another Adam Sandler one that was actually, you know, the fast forward Adam Sandler. What's it called, where he has a remote control? That's the same thing. They're just trying to use the Groundhog Day. It might be that. So look, if you've got a favorite David O. Russell film, because anytime you want to speak about Three Kings, basically I'm there. Yeah, George Clooney. Who was it? George Clooney.
Ice Cube.
And Mark Wahlberg.
And Spike Jones.
Yes, the man who directed some great movie clips. Look, 1300-222-774. If you've seen Silver Linings Playbook, or you might have some theories on why Hollywood just always struggles to breakthrough with a little bit of originality. Josh thinking that Silver Linings Playbook just kind of Hollywoodized a little bit of mental health, and just mentioning Groundhog Day because it is David O. Russell, one of his favourite films. David O. Russell's the man who made Silver Linings Playbook. You can text us, of course, as well on 0437 774 774. We won't talk about Lincoln this week. That too had glowing reviews and is a big Oscar contender. But Life of Pi.
Well, actually, I was just going to jump in just before we move off Groundhog Day, because I just did a quick research this. I mean, the funny thing is, I think why it has this longevity is because it's become one of those rare referential films in popular culture where anything with a circular narrative becomes referred to Groundhog Day.
Which is a real feat, isn't it? I mean, how many other movies have become a saying in the English language? Like, there can't be many.
Citizen Kane for epic, Ben-Hur for, you know, the historical epic. Yeah. There's probably a few. Even Source Code, that sci-fi action film with Jake Gyllenhaal, where he's on the train, the bomb on the train.
Do people use Source Code as a phrase? No.
No, no, for Groundhog Day. It was basically Groundhog Day on a train with a bomb.
It's very true, isn't it?
In fact, in terms of political parlances as well, I just read that the Iraqi or the US troops in Iraq would use the term Groundhog Day to describe each day of their tour on duty.
I've got no doubt.
Not just popular culture.
Yeah, if you've ever spent any time with the army, it certainly feels like Groundhog Day every day. Bill Murray, what happened to you? 1300-222-774. What was the one where he, there was one where he sort of, did he ever play the Hunter S. Thompson character? No, what was that?
We should have. That'd be good.
No, there's a film decades ago. Anyway, look, it's escaped me. If it comes back to me, I'll see if I can get there. I mentioned Life of Pi, the former Booker Prize winner. It is, what did win the Booker, Life of Pi, six, seven years ago. Not impressed, Josh?
Look, I saw this last week, and I saw it mainly on the back of some of the critical praise it was getting while I was in the States.
Trailer's pretty good.
See, I wasn't impressed by the trailer. It looked like an awful CGI fest with a really saccharine narrative. Look, I'm a little bit torn. Visually, there's some really stunning visual effects in this film. There's some pretty awful ones as well, just quietly. But look, I think as a visual film, particularly the CGI of the animals, it really reconstructs some animals quite nicely on screen. Some of the use of 3D deals with like multiple planes not just gimmicky way, but a kind of, you know, a clever way. Some of the background CGI looks a lot like What Dreams May Come, that awful Robin Williams film that came out a few years ago.
Right.
But look, I think what rubbed me the wrong way about this film is the religiosity of it, and almost the kind of preposterous religiosity.
But that's a big theme in the. It's a big theme in the book.
Well, I haven't read the book, so all I've got to go on is the film, and
it didn't work.
I mean, you've got the central character. I mean, in fact, probably the best way to describe the opening of this film is it's Indian Forrest Gump, because you've got a character who says, you know, without the accent of, you know, life is like a box of chocolates. Let me tell you about my life. I was born a Hindu. I became a Christian. I became a Muslim. But now I teach the Kabbalah at university. And he's sitting on a park bench, you know, telling this guy this story, and then we get the whole sort of narrative
told. Kabbalah is the American pronunciation of Jewish mysticism.
Well, that's how he pronounces it.
Of course, because I'm pretty sure the correct pronunciation is Kabbalah, but still, I'm just being picky. So, for people who haven't read the book or know the plot, just the basic structure of the plot.
Yeah, is it this guy living in Canada, this Indian-born gentleman who recounts this story of his childhood where they relocated a zoo from India, or they were relocating a zoo from India to Canada. Basically, the boat sinks and he escapes on a life raft with a couple of the surviving animals, including a tiger. And that becomes really the middle hour and a half of the film.
It's a long film.
That's what sort of struck me, that we get this voiceover narration, this flashback bookend or this flashback structure at the beginning, and then Ang Lee almost abandons that for the middle hour and a half of the film, and it becomes almost Castaway, but substitute the volleyball Wilson for a tiger. And some of that stuff is quite nice because it draws it out.
It's a CGI tiger, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And look, for the most part, that's interesting. But then, you know, we get the cutesy elements come in. They arrive at an island full of meerkats, and it's like, okay, where are we going? You know, where's the Coldplay song from the trailer going to kick back in, sort of thing?
Because Coldplay is the song in the trailer. Is there Coldplay music in the film?
No, it's really just a way of selling it,
Because that's what Coldplay music's for, it's for trailers.
And it sells it quite well.
Yeah.
But at the end, I mean, I think what really rubbed me the wrong way was the end of this film, which is it's not really a spoiler. This film's entire thesis is that we should believe in God, and according to this character, any God will do, or all of them at once, because it's a better story than science or rational thought. And I found that really offensive. Maybe it's just, you know, this is coming from, you know, the card-carrying atheist or the card-carrying agnostic. But I felt like the way in which it was trying to kind of not offend anyone by having a character who was all religions at once,
But a little bit too trite for you.
Yeah, and that was frustrating. And structurally as well, in terms of storytelling, given the whole thing is supposed to be, you know, we should believe in God because it's a better story. Ang Lee's storytelling in this, I didn't think was all that clever. I think it needed a rework to kind of be more playful with the storytelling, because it gives the audience so many hints as to where it's going and what's going to be the sort of the twist or the denouement at the end.
Tell me, though, the central character, he's sort of plucked from obscurity, or in fact, I think he hadn't even been in a film. Is that right?
Possibly. I'm not too sure the backstory of this film. And look, I should also qualify that maybe it's an Ang Lee thing, because I haven't really latched onto too many Ang Lee films post Crouching Tiger. I thought his Hulk film was pretty awful.
I didn't even like
Brokeback Mountain that much. I thought it was a great first half hour, and it felt like a novella. It felt like it should have been a short film.
Was that best film, or they just got acting Oscars?
I got nominated for best film.
Nominated.
Just the same way Life of Pi has 11 nominations.
11?
So it's nominated in almost all the major categories except for acting.
Wow.
Which, again, I think it's up there.
That's interesting to not get nominated for acting.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that says a lot. It's a visually, it's effects-driven film, but, you know, it's got the noms for direction for Ang Lee, even though Ben Affleck got knocked out, which I thought was strange, because I thought, in terms of direction, Argo was a much stronger...
Yeah, Argo. And is Argo also nominated for Best Picture, I think?
It got a nom for Best Film, yeah.
Okay, and the special effects, I mean, they did look spectacular. They're good. You saw it? Did you see 3D or 2D?
I did. I saw it in 3D, and I think that was worthwhile. And I mean, that was part of the, I guess, my interest in the film, was that people had been beating up and saying the 3D is as good as Hugo, or you know. And look, it makes a nice work of the 3D. It's not just in a gimmicky sense. Visually, it's strong, but I think it needs more. And I think Hugo had more. Just in terms of integrating 3D with narrative. So, look, I mean, it's got a cutesy appeal. It's got a family appeal. It's got an appeal to people who've read the book, and a lot of the people who I've heard who are fans of the book love the film.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you have talked about it with people who read it, and they like the movie as well.
Yeah, so I think there's a nice sort of tie in there.
Okay. Look, it's Life of Pi, of course, spelled P-I, the number. Check it out there. Both Life of Pi and Silver Linings Playbook are on wide release. You can check out Josh's stuff at filmology.com. That's spelled with a PH. Josh, thank you.
Pleasure.